Hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, thank you all for inviting me. Can I invite you all to just turn your bodies a little bit towards me so I can see you and you can see me without straining your necks? I have to be fully seen. So, I'm going to talk today about the three marks of existence. And I don't really know you, so I don't know kind of what you know, what you don't know, what you get. Just raise your hand and ask a question. It will not rattle me. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So, this is about... So, the three marks of existence are one body, emptiness, and no self. And they are profoundly interrelated. So, all of our suffering comes from our idea that we are separate and autonomous beings. All of our suffering comes from that notion. And if you really examine that, you'll see how true it is. This is actually the second noble truth. That is what suffering is. It comes from our sense of self. And what do? Most of our lives, we take care of ourselves. And it's very hard to really let go of that sense of self. So sitting meditation makes a big difference. The more you sit, the longer you sit, the deeper you sit, the easier it is to loosen those binds that hold us to this notion of self. So in the beginning, it's really almost beyond us to imagine really what this means, because our sense of self is so integrated to our life. But it's worth the work, because on the other side of that, letting go of self is liberation. And I have to say my own experience is that it comes in gaps, you know, it's instants. You get a moment or two of freedom, and then something inside us arises and we're locked back into self. Fear is the thing that brings you right back into self most quickly, most efficiently. Fear. So you could be riding happily on a bike, enjoying the breeze in your hair and the sense of power on the bike and the experience of being in the moment. And a car comes too close, and you are immediately into self-protective mode. Fear, need to protect. So when we're in self, so this is not a bad thing to be in self. Sometimes it's essential. You know, we do have to protect ourselves. So in Buddhism, there's two kinds of reality. Well, you probably know all this, but I'll say it anyway. I gave this talk yesterday at the prison. So, yeah, we're all imprisoned in ourselves, exactly. I was amazed at how sophisticated they are. You know, they have a lot of free time, so some of them some of them spend a lot of time reading Buddhist material, and they know quite a lot. When we're in ourself, there's me versus you. There's us versus them. And this division is the source of all wars, all crimes, all violence. When we can get through that sense of self, and in those moments when we can feel our interconnection, when we can experience it, in those moments, there's no boundary. We feel that profound interconnection between ourselves and others. So I'm sure all of you have had this experience of feeling really connected. It's just hard to recognize it when you're in it. Because when you're having the experience, there's really nobody there to be having it. So it's like in that instant, you're just there, you're just present. And in that moment, there's a sense of freedom. So we see in Buddhism, we see the universe through two lenses, relative reality and absolute reality. So relative reality is the way we go through our daily life. It's dualistic. I'm here, Jeff's there, Sensei's there. There's two or three. There's no sense of that connection. It's just dualistic. In absolute reality, which is something we get glimpses of, we're interconnected. We see the interconnection. We experience it. It's really more of an experience than a seeing. We feel for each other the same kind of protection and caring that we feel for ourselves. We want to take care of the world. There's a real impulse to take care of what needs to be taken care of, which is right in front of us. Just think of the issue of climate change for a moment, which is so important. If we're in relative reality, and of course, I really don't want you to think that I'm always in this more spacious space. I move back and forth between caring about the world and caring about myself. And I think that's how it is for most people who practice. You move back and forth. But it's good to know where you are. So when I'm in myself, when I'm really glued into myself, climate change is a pain in the neck. I mean, how do you stop using plastic? You really looked at that? I'm sure you've all heard about how terrible plastic is for the environment. But it is ubiquitous. That's a good word. It's everywhere, and it completely has consumed a kind of huge place in our lives. Plastic wrap, plastic bottles, plastic bags. So when I'm in my sense of self, it's all a nuisance. You know, I'm slightly irritated that I shouldn't be using so many plastic bags. I should find some other way to do this without plastic bags or plastic wrap or plastic anything. And when I'm really connected to how much I care about the earth, I wash the bags. I can't, you know, I really can't seem to find a way to let go of them completely. But I wash the bags, I reuse them, I try to use as few as possible. I stop using plastic wrap. I've got this new stuff now. I haven't actually bought it. You can't see it. You can't see through it. So it's not transparent. Have you seen this on the internet? Some kind of stuff that stretches, but it's, you don't know what's inside it. So everything in the refrigerator becomes a mystery. It's reusable. That's the main thing. It's reusable. But I do care about climate change. I do care about it. I'm probably going to get some of this mysterious stuff, and I'll let you know what my experience is, but I've been putting it off for a while. So when we see the universe as our own body, when we see the earth as our own body, our perspective changes in how we relate to everything else. I love to snorkel, and I've spent maybe 20 or 30 years snorkeling, and it's heartbreaking to see how the reefs have deteriorated. So mostly I've snorkeled in the West Indies, all the islands down there. And over the years, the reefs have really deteriorated. The fish are not as colorful, the reefs aren't as colorful, and I care. I really care about that. So when I think about it, every time I go snorkeling, I feel really a profound sadness. And I would like to save the earth. So I'll do what little I can. It feels overwhelming. But it's worth taking those small steps to take care of the earth. So there are many methods of meditation that can move us out of our limited self, our small self, and into the experience of one body. My own experience is that it takes a longer retreat. It's not enough to really experience that. I don't think my experience is the only, it's not like it's the right way to do it. Other people have other experiences. But my own experience has been, it's been the longer retreats that give me insight into letting go of self. So when I sit for my daily meditation, my mind is quite busy. You know, I may get a few moments of silence. And I have to do it right when I roll out of bed. So I roll out of bed, throw on my bathrobe and go sit in my pajamas. Because as soon as I get into check my email, trouble. I got to go straight down. If I do it at the end of the day, my mind is so busy, it's just, I'm still solving the day's problems. But this is really unique to me. I tell people who can't do it in the morning, and lots of young mothers, for example, cannot do it in the morning, to sit when their kids are asleep and have gone to bed. But for me, what works best is in the morning. But my mind is still busy when I sit every day. So in order for my mind to quiet down, I need to be on a long retreat. And it takes 3 or 4 days for it to settle. And then I get glimpses of quiet. And that's very liberating. Because myself, which is largely defined by my thoughts, my sense of self is, the thing that gives me my sense of self the most is what goes on in my mind. So when my mind gets quiet, I have a chance to experience that sense of no self. When the fundamental views of impermanence, which is the first mark of existence, emptiness, and no self, really penetrate our life becomes one of liberation. So even though we're busy during the day, even though our minds are busy and we're productive and we're doing things, we are living a life of liberation when we can begin to see the self in action. So as we begin to recognize our own egos, as we begin to be embarrassed by ourselves, because that's exactly what happens. I was so embarrassed on Friday. I can't even tell the story, but I revealed myself as a little greedy to some very senior teachers who I was on the phone with. And they both went, oh. And I thought, oh, how do I walk this backwards? There was no way. I just had to be embarrassed. That was the self causing me some suffering. Happens a lot. So the cushion experience loosens our binding to the self. It loosens our connection to our own ego. Many, many years ago, early in my meditation career, I remember preparing for an interview with a teacher. And I spent, the whole morning preparing for it. You know, I debated, I had this whole story going about how whatever I was going to say was going to reveal the depth of my practice and my enlightenment. And on the other side, I had this funny little Buddha guy, you know, the laughing Buddha. So I had this image of him. He was roaring with laughter, but I couldn't let go of it. You know, I couldn't let go of it. Well, no, that's not going to do it. And I'd start play the whole thing again, a whole new story about how I would reveal myself as already enlightened. Oh, it was just so sick. But the little laughing Buddha was helpful. It kept me awake that this was my ego game. So to move beyond our experience, our sitting experience, and into that life of liberation, we really have to study as well as sit. We have to try to understand some of these concepts. So impermanence, I'm sure you all know what impermanence is. So take impermanence and connect it to the one body. One body. We are all one. We are all one with everything in the universe. Everything is profoundly interconnected. So emptiness is that interconnection. Emptiness is a piece of paper that came from the trees, grew in the forest, and they were watered by the rain that came from the clouds. And when we're done with this, and the clouds of course form from the water that evaporated, and when this paper is done, it will go into some receptacle where it'll be recycled, become once again part of the earth. And that interpenetration is the one body. And it's also emptiness, because emptiness is that interpenetration. It is, this piece of paper is not a separate thing. It's not a separate thing. It's part of the clouds and the trees and the rain and the earth and me who put words on it and the ink that came out of the printer and the plastic that makes up the printer that came from the oil that was in the earth. So there is nothing that is independent. That is really a false illusion, that there's any complete independence. That's emptiness. And when we begin to see into emptiness, something shifts. Something shifts. When we see into impermanence and emptiness and no self, our suffering is reduced. Well, for one thing, because we're not alone. We're not alone. We no longer see ourselves as alone. We see ourselves as interconnected. And being alone and feeling alienated and like you have to do it all by yourself, whatever it is in your life, causes a lot of suffering. And there's fear around it. You know, we're all anxious. We're anxious because we think we have to do it ourselves. We have to look good. We have to take care of things. We think we're afraid people will see our inner world, our confusion, our lack of competence, our inadequacy. So we have to put a good face on everything all the time. It's a lot of work. And there's a lot of fear in there. So as we begin to let go of the self, as we begin to experience ourselves as the one body, the sense of being alone drops away. It comes back, but it really does drop away, and you have this experience of interconnection and being safe and fear of death. So let's just look at the one body for a moment. There is one body that is constantly changing. Just take a moment to take in the whole universe. That's you. Constantly in a state of change. What is death? It's just kind of recycled. We're our own recycling machine. The older I get, the more I have to focus on death. So it's really good to look at it closely. So there is, it's interesting, the Buddha saw this 2,500 years ago, that everything is composed of energy, or Buddha nature. There is a flow of energy in the universe that flows through all of us. And there's form that arises out of that energy and comes into being. And then there's formlessness. As that form falls away, deteriorates, changes, and turns back into that energy flow. Now, Einstein found something like that. I'm not very good in physics, but basically that is, as I understand it. So there's this flow of energy. Forms come into being. This is the Heart Sutra. You all know the Heart Sutra? Forms. Emptiness is forms. Emptiness is form. Form is emptiness. That's what we're talking about. Flow of energy. Forms come into being. We are all forms. So is the bell. Cushions. Eventually we all return to the earth. Some things take longer. Some things go quickly. And we return to formlessness. Back into formlessness. So, consciousness is the mind at work. It is part of what gives us the illusion of self. There are the five skandhas. Consciousness is our awareness. It's our sense of self. So we have awareness that comes up. We have the ability to see, hear. All of that is consciousness. Here, I'll just skip to the end for a moment. I'll come back to it. But the things that form the self, that give self, our sense of self is actually formed by five things. Sometimes they're called the five skandhas. Sometimes they're called the five aggregates. They're called baskets of things. There's lots of different terms for what makes up our sense of self, how we develop this illusion of a self. So one of them is form. We have a form. We have a shape. We have color. we have size, and we see other things out there that have form. Okay, that's the first thing. The second is sensation, the sense that some things are pleasurable, some things are unpleasurable, we want to avoid them, and some things are neutral. So there's a liking and a disliking, one of the things that consciousness holds. The third is perception. That's the facility to take in that what we're seeing is a door, a rug, another person. So that's perception. And then there's volition. Volition is intention, wanting something, making ourselves act, our sense of agency. And lastly, and into that is linked karma. Our intentions create karma. So it's really important to get all of this. And then the last thing is consciousness, which is the awareness of how other skandhas, the first five things that I name, operate. These things are unique to us, and they give us a sense of self. And then we spend the rest of our path trying to let go of them, to see beyond them, to go beyond them. So the five skandhas themselves are impermanent and empty. So let me see what I skipped here. So here I have a little bit. We experience impermanence all the time, but we rarely see it. Our minds are filled with racing thoughts, one chasing the other across the space of our consciousness. Our mind is so rarely still, we can't even see its state of constant flux until we start to sit. And then we get glimpses of it. Busy, 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 busy. We have to turn our awareness inward to catch it. That's classic Shikantaza practice, turning your mind inward, turning the light towards the source of awareness. It usually stops thoughts, but it takes a lot of concentration to hold it. But then you can see how busy your mind is. So meditation provides that opportunity to see exactly how our mind works. And if you sometimes think that you're failing because all you see is your busy mind, that's success. That's success. So our bodies, too, are in a constant state of change, unfortunately. It's a downward spiral. Death is just around the corner. And in a way, we have to spend every moment preparing for it. It's really good not to avoid thoughts of death. Really good. Don't avoid seeing the dying. Don't avoid being with them. Don't avoid your own thoughts of your own death. Let those thoughts in. So, I just wanted to close, since I think I ought to close, with a quote by Dag Hammarskjöld in his book Markings. Do you know who he is?
Yeah,
everybody know
he
is?
Got killed in a plane crash.
Yeah, exactly. So, and he was a Buddhist. To exist in the fleet joy of becoming, to be a channel for life as it flashes by in its gaiety and courage, cool water glittering in the sunlight, in a world of sloth, anxiety, and aggression. This is our moment of enlightenment. To exist in the fleet joy of becoming. To be a channel for life as it flashes by in its gaiety and courage. Cool water glittering in the sunlight. In a world of sloth, anxiety, and aggression. So we don't have to get rid of all the world's problems. They are going to continue. They just change. But we can exist in a space of openness, vulnerability, and awareness.